I'm Gab, he's Jules. Gray skies over West London, gray and crappy outside. Not as nice as Lisbon, where I just returned from, Jules. But, tell you what, maybe the gray's turning to blue because Frank Lampard possibly on his way back to Chelsea.
Indeed.
As we record. Also, we'll be getting into that. We'll be getting into a lot of stuff happening midweek in various cups around Europe, from Inter to Bayern losing. But we have to start with El Clásico. Where else do you start? It is El Clásico.
Of course.
Real Madrid go into this. They're a goal down. Yeah. They lost at home.
Yeah.
They've lost La Liga. Older players. We're not really sure if Ancelotti's back, even though he says he's going to come back. He'll stay until 2034 if they'll have him, blah, blah, blah. Ha, ha. And then they go, and it's a demolition.
In
the second half.
Yeah, in the second half.
And it's another hat-trick for...
Kareem the Dream! Back-to-back hat-trick. And the first one against Real Valladolid, you take it, okay, in 7 minutes is great, but a classical hat-trick is pretty special. 12 hat-tricks now in Karim Benzema's career, in his whole career, 16 goals in 43.
Didn't Shearer have like 12 in a single season?
Maybe. Okay. Good for Shearer then, I don't know.
Just checking.
Kareem the Dream is very special, times three. But the only thing was, before the game, Gab, when you saw that De Jong wasn't there, Pedri wasn't there, no Dembele, no Christensen, and it was a weaker Barca side. You thought, okay, maybe this time could be different because the last three Clásicos, as you said, Barca won them all. And it was very different. Even if Barca had their chances in the first half, they could have had a penalty early on. They could have scored, certainly before the first Real Madrid goal on the counter-attack. But once Real Madrid won 1-0, there were no other winner.
So I kind of feel like I'm going to give Barcelona a little bit of a bit of a pass here. For the thinking is, okay, on the one hand, you're not in European football anymore. This is your Champions League. Win the Copa del Rey, right? You don't have the motivation to stay in the league because you've wrapped it up. On the other hand, those absences weigh really, really heavy. At the weekend, we saw Marcos Alonso at centre back against Elche, right?
Yeah.
It's fine. Against Elche, Marcos Alonso can play centre back. But there's a huge drop-off. I mean, when I never thought we would actually say, like, oh, Christensen missing is like, you know, Beckenbauer's missing. But it did kind of feel that way.
It did.
Eric
and also
Garcia,
when you move Koundé and Araujo to defend on Vinicius, I think that messes up your back four as well.
Well, he's done it before and it worked in the League Clásico.
But this time it didn't. And Koundé was all over the place.
And still, in that first half, they had their opportunities.
And
I thought they had the upper hand. Right until that weirdo sliding doors moment at the end of the first half when Lewandowski has a chance and then you miss it and they go right up the pitch and score.
Yeah. And to be fair, and we've said it before, this Real Madrid side with Vinicius and Benzema and when Rodrigo plays as well is the best counter-attacking team in Europe right now. They're so devastating. We saw against Liverpool, for example, and okay, it's an average Liverpool side, but still, when they counter like that, it's just very hard to stop.
Yeah, I think also a bit of bad luck too, because I thought Koundé was going to clear it, but it looks like he slips or he's kind of uncoordinated and everything. And it's interesting, I think, psychologically too, because, you know, we say, oh, you never want to concede right before halftime and whatever, but all it does, the messaging, I thought at halftime should have been very straightforward from Xavi, and I'm sure it was. He said, okay, guys, unlucky on the goal. This should teach us. Let's learn from this. We should have put it away. Now all it means is it's nil-nil, right? Because it's 1-1 on average.
Yeah, exactly.
But then I thought there was a real sea change in the second half in the way the game unfolded. It wasn't just a case of Real Madrid counter. I mean, Benzema's first goal.
Yeah.
Modric coming alive when he didn't do much in the first half, that showed that something went missing from Barcelona there.
Yeah, and I think Carlo Ancelotti changed something at halftime as well by putting Modric a bit higher up on the pitch, and Real Madrid as a whole played a little bit higher to start the second half. They scored early again after the break, like they did again against Liverpool in the Champions League, which you've just considered before the break, and 5 minutes in the second half you're already 2-0 down. And Sergio Roberto, you know, I don't rate, who took a stupid yellow card after 10 minutes, can't foul Modric on that second goal. Otherwise, you foul him, he doesn't deliver the assist for Benzema, it's a free kick, okay, and you take a yellow card, you take it for the team.
Of course.
Now, you can't do that. It's literally, I think Modric has a free road there to then cross the ball for Benzema. Koundé is... he's out of position because Rodrigo made a good run, and then that's it. And once you're 2-0 down, you know how hard it's going to be against that Real Madrid.
And then the coup de grace, Frank Kessie, who we do like a lot.
Yeah, we do like a lot.
You know, he's the president.
Yeah.
But that was a brain fart.
It was.
There's no reason to do that. And you're going to foul him.
Yeah, and again, you're 30 minutes in that second half, and you're 3 goals down already, and you conceded 2, and there's no need to do. That's the thing, is that we've said it, but again, we repeat ourselves when we talk about Real Madrid. Yeah. But when you give them those opportunities, they destroy you.
Jules, like I said, I'm kind of giving Barcelona a pass for this, because I do think the absences weigh a lot heavier than people realize, and you wanted to make a point that in terms of creativity, you know, as much as we both love Kessié and that, when it's Kessié and Sergio Roberto in midfield, you're going to be predictable.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah, and I think they were, especially in that second half, and when Camavinga defends so well on Rafinha, who is your main creative point, really, in that team, because Gavi does a lot of really good things, but he fluidified the games, and he links up everything, but you rely on Rafinha to be the productive one and the creative one, and I guess Alejandro Balde on the other side a little bit. But Camavinga had an amazing game at left back against Rafinha again, and Camavinga is just keeps surprising me game after game. But then from a Barca point of view, you're predictable, and then on the bench, you bring on Ansu Fati, but you know, we talked about it enough. He doesn't have the impact that really he used to have, or he should have now. So it becomes difficult. And then again, you open yourself to the counter-attacking threat from this Real Madrid side.
I do wonder, again, hindsight is always 20/20. I do wonder, though, if maybe this wasn't the game to say, all right, let me go more defensive in midfield. Let me put, Gavi in the three in midfield, with the two guys more holding. And then I get Ansu on the pitch.
Yeah.
From the start. And I say,
listen, I agree.
I also to send a message to, Bori or whatever his dad's name is. Okay, this is your chance. Make or break. I suspect he thought Real Madrid are going to play on the counter or whatever. And to be fair, in the first half, he was kind of vindicated. They had the better chances. But after that, and I think what this speaks to as well with Barcelona is that for all the players that they've signed and everything, and there's a certain fundamental, I think, instability to this team. Partly through the injuries, partly through the fact that De Jong obviously wasn't there, but he went into the season with the whole, Manchester United, let's sell De Jong. Oh, why won't De Jong leave so we can make money and blah, blah, blah. And then all of a sudden, he has, especially the last couple of months before his injury, the kind of season he had. All this stuff, playing Marcos Alonso at center back. I mean, let's just think about, when we talk about Barcelona's situation financially, right, and where they are, and we hate these things are normal, right? But Alex Balde is suddenly a fundamental player on this team.
Yeah.
And he's a guy who, I think 12 months ago, very few people knew what he was. He wasn't even, as I understand it, he's not even somebody who was super highly rated
the
cantera,
right?
To the point that that's one of the reasons why they signed Marcos Alonso to begin with, right? You have Marcos Alonso at 33 years of age, or however old he is, who is a left back, not known for his defending.
Yeah, more of a wing back, even.
A wing back, yeah. And you're in a situation where he's basically your second center back option, right? Because you don't have a right back because you screwed up the Bellerin thing, right? So because you have to want to play Koundé or Araujo there, Christensen's out, so you got to play him. Also because, what happened to Eric?
He came on. To my shock, he came on. I almost turned the TV off because I didn't want to see him.
Well, you wouldn't have liked it on Monday, because on Monday I said, I thought he played really well at the weekend.
Yeah, but against Elche, I would play well in that team. So,
but doesn't it make more sense for him to play in central midfield? If you have to play, because no.
I would rather him not playing at all. But
no, but if I ask you, what is the best thing that this man does?
Yeah, I guess
he passes the ball.
Yeah, exactly.
Right? And if it's an open field tackle, put your body in, right?
Yeah, but not under pressure. You can play midfield against Elche,
that's the point.
Pressure.
You've got center backs behind you. You're not under pressure. Yes. You're just, I'm just wondering, what is this guy's future? I don't understand why so many people adore him when, I think you have sort of consistent issues with him. And then these are all things that he has to deal with, that Xavi has had to deal with, and that Xavi has worked through. And I think a lot of people, when they speak of Barcelona, they're just blinded by the big names, and they don't realize the job that he's done.
You know what was interesting? Just quickly to finish on the sort of tactical aspect of the game. In the end, a lot of it came down to the to the Camavinga v. Rafinha battle and the Araujo v. Vinicius battle. And you kind of knew that, I know it's in a simplistic way, but this is the way of whoever wins those two battles will have the upper hand on the game, and rightly right. so. And again, for Camavinga to be so good defensively on Rafinha for most of the game, and on the other side, to see Araujo struggling more against Vini than in the last three games put together, I thought was very interesting. And Vinicius had a great game. I mean, the double touch for the last goal and for the assist for the Benzema hat-trick was just a wonderful piece of creativity and genius from him. But it felt like, even if at times he was really tense, we saw Gavi, who's always tense in those games, Vini as well, and then winding up the crowd, who was winding him up too, to be fair, was just great. This is a classical, even if it's just a Copa del Rey semi-final second leg, or, you know, it's
just
yeah. It's still great, I think, to see Clásicos like that.
And I think also what helped this time was having Rodrigo in the front three instead of Alberto. I mean, there's pros and cons with both.
Yeah,
right? It does mean you're not leaning. I mean, when they played in the league, obviously Araujo was phenomenal and he did his part. But everything lean that way. With Rodrigo, at least you have the out that you don't have with Valverde, because it's just a different skill set. Araujo, I felt, didn't necessarily get the help defensively that you would have when you know it's going to go that way.
Yeah.
And so it became more of an open field defending, and, you know, Vinicius is tough to handle.
Yeah.
Especially if Vinicius watched back the Clásico, he realizes, hey, I don't have to go the same way every single time.
No,
sometimes I can go to the outside a little more.
Exactly, like on the penalty. Because on the penalty, you maybe expect him to go the other way and he comes back inside, and that's when Kessié make the foul.
With Real Madrid, I still think this is another team which has a ton of question marks. And one thing is kind of becoming clear is we haven't seen as much of Tchouaméni in the starting 11 recently. Obviously, last night, Kroos, Modric, and he moved Valverde deeper.
Yeah.
But then he didn't play at the weekend either.
Mm.
I'm just wondering, has there been a drop of form? Is it a physical thing?
Yeah, I think after the World Cup, he struggled a little bit. And on the other hand, Camavinga has been outstanding since the return of the league after the World Cup. And Ancelotti was talking even after the Real Valladolid, or before the Real Valladolid game and before the Clásico, on how amazing Camavinga has been. And Camavinga starting at 21 of the last 23 Real Madrid games, whether left back or as a holding midfielder, and has been incredible. And his good performances with France against Ireland too, I think, kind of boosted his confidence, the momentum, everything like that. And now I think Tchouaméni has gone from maybe being your number two choice in midfield to being clearly, after Modric, Cruz, Camavinga, Valverde, and now only Tchouaméni. And
so
that's a bit worrying, I think, for him.
When we imagine, obviously people have talked about this endlessly, like how Real Madrid, they need to pick up pieces in the summer, but, and they've got a lot of people who are going to leave the club, but they have that midfield of the future. You know, that's the way it's been sold.
Yeah.
In Camavinga, Tchouaméni, and Valverde, you have got that right foot, left foot balance. You have Tchouaméni. But do we need to revise a little bit what that might look like? And this is what I'm driving at, is those three, none of them, if I were to ask you who's the most creative of the three, it's probably Tchouaméni, right?
Yeah.
But Kroos and Modric are both far more creative than both of them. I'm just wondering, and look, I don't know if Carlo's going to be there, and is this something that might they need to add another piece to resolve that creativity at some point? Somebody who can kind of, you know, be an off-brand Modric in certain games.
Maybe. And that, I think, although Jude Bellingham is a very different player, you would not be surprised why they would maybe want to go for him. And you can keep Cruz. I think Modric is the one really where
you want to keep Cruz and Modric for a year. But I'm saying is, I'm talking
longer term.
The nice thing is that midfield could be your midfield for 10 years, right?
Yeah.
If we're projecting 2-3 years down the line, is there enough all-roundedness? Is there enough balance there? Or might we end up seeing more of Camavinga at left back?
Yeah, I think that's the thing. But I think Camavinga can become a really good passer. To maybe to the quality of Toni Kroos, and I think you can make Tchouaméni or Valverde a really good box to box driving forward with the ball and gaining ground with the ball, like like you would need, I think, in a team like that. But don't forget as well that I think the midfielder that you will need or look for will also depend a lot on who's your number nine once Karim goes. Because if you have a number nine, let's say, like a Harry Kane type who drops deeper, then maybe you need less of that creative player in midfield that we're talking about now. If you've got Erling Haaland or Kylian up front, then maybe you need a bit more. So it will depend also who comes at number nine.
I also don't think it's necessarily written in stone that they're going to play 4-3-3 for
a
different manager.
Yeah,
you might see a different setup.
True.
Final word on the rumbling Barcelona Negreira case. There are a couple things that happened. One is Alexander Čeferin. He gave an interview to Slovenian media where, you know, he kind of had a go at, obviously brought up the Super League again. It's kind of his favorite argument, understandably, I think. But he's like, oh, you know, of those three teams, look at them now. Like, you know, two of them basically have criminal investigations. Let's see what they can find on Real Madrid, which I thought you don't need to go and drag Real Madrid into this, right? But then there was a report on Monday in La Vanguardia, which is a Catalan newspaper, which sort of suggested that, I don't want to get into too much of the nitty-gritty, but that Tebas and La Liga somehow might have not been honest in presenting the facts.
False
numbers.
Yeah.
Tebas furious about this, obviously immediately threatened to sue, so I don't want to go too much into it. In the end, we'll see. If he does sue, we'll let the court decide what's right or wrong. What I don't understand about this is, what does Tebas gain? Because La Liga can't punish them, as we've established, right? Because the statute of limitations is gone. UEFA could. But if there's forged documents, I mean,
you're throwing it away, basically.
Is he saying he forged Barcelona's documents? And then Barcelona's like, no, these are the documents. And you've got bank statements to back things up and documents. Like, you can't get somebody in trouble like this by forging documents, you know, unless you're in the inside. Like, this is what I didn't understand about the piece.
But do you think Tebas and Laporta and Barcelona have been, you know, kind of at war for a long time now. And do you think Tebas thought this is an opportunity to, like, really go even harder on them to the point that he could have misbehaved in a way?
I mean, look, there's people who like Tebas, there's people who hate Tebas. I think even people who hate Tebas would say Tebas isn't stupid.
Yeah.
So, you know, this isn't like, you know, the Agatha Christie murder hour where you find evidence and whatever, right?
Yeah.
Like, if you're forging, because these documents, they're all backed up, they're lawyered. Unless you're going into Barcelona safe and forging the document there together with the one that you receive. Like, you see what I'm saying?
Yeah, I'm with you completely, man.
You're going to get caught. Like, it seems really hard that, like, a proper court or a proper investigator, if Barcelona say, no, this document is falsified, that they're going to say, wait.
Yeah.
You know? That's what I find extraordinary about it. But again, you know, we're not the investigators. Let's wait for the prosecutors to do their job.
It's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
All right, Joe, so Chelsea have, as we know, parted ways with Graham Potter. They are, as we record this, people take it as read that Frank Lampard Jr. is coming back to be interim boss between now and the end of the season and win the Champions League, perhaps.
Yeah.
I mean, worked for Robbie D.
Yeah.
And then, obviously, there's rumors, Luis Enrique, the future. We're going to get into all that, but they played a game on Tuesday night against a pretty big team, pretty big game, Chelsea-Liverpool at home. It finished 0-0. Before we get to Chelsea, I want to start with the Liverpool end, because I thought Liverpool were really poor.
Yeah.
Again.
Yeah.
You can say, oh, it's a good point away from home.
It's
not against this Chelsea team, right?
Exactly.
But were you surprised by Klopp's approach, the number of changes that he made? What was his squad rotate?
I guess in a week where you have City, Chelsea and Arsenal back-to-back, all back-to-back, you need to I guess you can't play the same 11 for those three games in 6 days.
So you play your worst players against the worst of the three teams.
No, maybe, but that's the way, I guess. What was you going to play?
The team that you're theoretically competing against. Well, no, you're not really, but yeah, you need the top four, right?
But the thing is, you need points badly. So would
this
it,
is the
would
easiest it, way to get points, Chelsea away.
Yeah, it is. But in the sense that you would almost risk your same 11, pretty much, let's say, for all three games and see where you are.
Maybe not your same 11, but not so many changes. I guess Van Dijk was injured, right? So that was
he's done well. I think he was sick or something.
But I
struggle to understand. Then Klopp says, it's a good result, baby steps, which he said already three or four times this season. And every time they have a decent result against a big team, he says, this baby step, we're in the right direction. And then they fall apart again in the next game.
See, I don't mind ever trying something different, right? I think he's really at the end of his tether where he can't work out how to make this team play better. And so the idea, let's make the changes, let's play the guys who played less, and then they'll bring intensity and they'll be super motivated. I'm guessing that was the thinking.
Yeah, you would think
that intensity wasn't there, but I would argue it also wasn't there because I thought Chelsea actually played well in this. I thought they...
Me too.
They created a bunch of chances. N'Golo Kante...
was amazing.
I didn't expect him to be so decisive, so good, because he just had that spell at the weekend.
He hasn't played since... That's his first start since the 15th of August. There was in no world a player at 32 years of age can come back after 7 months without football, apart from 30 minutes against Aston Villa 3 days before,
right,
and play like that for 68 minutes.
And find the rhythm. I think physically, you heal, you get well, whatever.
Yeah, but you're not much
But to have the rhythm in the game, I thought was pretty remarkable. You take issue with the best on earth again. He should have had a
no,
couple
but of like I thought the criticism of Chelsea's performance really harsh. I read people saying uninspiring performance. I'm sorry, you don't have 2.2 XG when you're uninspiring against Liverpool. But they scored two goals that were rightly disallowed, of course. The Reece James one and the Kai Havertz one. But they were movement at time. Yeah, of course he was not perfect and could have been better. I just don't think it was that bad.
It's not perfect because this is a badly put together team. And
exactly.
Been saying all year.
You know, Bruno on the bench, so.
It's not Bruno's fault.
No, but you know what I mean? Like,
Bruno going to Bruno. Right?
Yeah, exactly. He's passionate, bless him.
The big news is while Chelsea are looking for a permanent manager, they appear to be on the verge of bringing back the guy who was their permanent manager before, Frank Lampard Jr. Now, he's coming off, he was let go by Everton earlier this year. So this makes sense to me.
No, it can't be.
No,
hang on.
Can I finish? This makes sense to me if Frank Lampard says, you know what? I want to have a role in this Chelsea team. Maybe not as coach, but I back myself. You know, Frank Lampard, everybody's man says, the guy's really smart.
Yeah.
He's really intelligent. Loves Chelsea. Probably, like many people, says Boley and Igbali. You know?
Yeah.
So maybe there's a role for me at the club as a head of football operations, whatever, in the future. And maybe if I'm just here and I'm around them...
Okay, that's from his point of view.
From his point of view.
What does it make sense from Chelsea's point of view?
Okay, this would require Igbali and Boley saying, all right, we've made a lot of really dumb decisions, and we've put our faith in the wrong people, and we need a football CEO. Because Boley can't, and Igbali, much as they'd like to, they can't be here and play CEO for the foreseeable future, right? They're owners. And why don't we hang out with Frank for a couple months and see? He's smart. Maybe he interviewed really well.
Okay, I will ask you again.
The current CEO,
where does it make
Tom
sense
Blake
from a Chelsea point
guy
of view to have him on the bench for the remaining of the season?
Because the season's over. It doesn't matter, right?
So
maybe you get a lift with Frank against Real Madrid, whatever. Maybe you take your chance in the Champions League. You know, long shot, but whatever. We've been there before.
You're kind. You're very kind. It makes no sense. And I love Frank Lampard, and we work together at BT. It makes no sense whatsoever.
Right.
It doesn't make any sense.
So this is the scenario I have, right? Lampard lives walking distance from the ground. Lampard wants to help. So you buy my reasons why Lampard would do this, right? Why it makes sense for Frank Lampard.
Yeah, if he's asked.
No, if he's asked why he would put himself forward, let's face it, right? It's not like Bowley and Ibali are home watching YouTube videos, and they're like, oh, this guy Lampard, yeah, wait, who's he? You know, I you understand why, degree, somebody would have put him in, right?
If Lampard had been in Graham Potter's staff, Chelsea would have sacked everybody but Lampard, and Lampard would have taken over as an interim coach, like Stellini and Mason.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Okay.
On that point,
so you
can
see the appeal from Lampard's perspective.
Yeah. But Lampard was not in Graham Potter's staff.
Right.
So now we saw him on. We saw that he was at the Liverpool game. Didek Bali and Bowley just bumped into him and said, "Oh yeah, you legend, token for the fans who hate us right now." Yeah, maybe, because other than that, I just don't see as a manager what he would bring. But maybe you're right. Maybe you just see out the season.
And maybe Bruno doesn't feel that he's ready to be number one even on an interim basis between now and the end of the season. Because it's, you know, 4 years ago, I think the guy was still playing, right?
Yeah.
But why the question is, what you don't understand is from Bowley and Igbali's point of view, why Lampard interim?
To start with. Right. Because I don't rate him as a coach. But then, the guys thereafter to become permanent are all out of a job right now, right? If we just say Luis Enrique, Nagelsmann, Pochettino, let's say for the sake of them three, why can't they come now?
I think the reason they can't come now is that they all know their value. So in other words, first of all, with Nagelsmann, I think you would still need to spend time with Bayern resolving that contractual situation, right? So then time, results, they're paying Real Madrid, well, I guess it's 2 weeks' time, but still, right?
Yeah.
I think they're thinking, and maybe they can still do that. Maybe they bring in Lampard, maybe just a couple days, and then they say, "Hey, Frank, you know." Because look, I don't know if they do this, right? But if they do bring in Lampard, and they say, "Frank, we'll pay you until we bring in a new manager. Are you cool with that?" And he says, maybe he says yes because he just wants to be around the club. Maybe he realizes that this club is his dimension, and it makes sense for him, right? He's not in a position to argue, "No, I want a 3-year deal," right? It's an interim.
Yeah.
I'd be very surprised if Nagelsmann took over before the end of the season. The other one that you mentioned, other than Luis Enrique, Poch. Okay.
Just for someone
Poch has his bags packed and he's ready to come. Yeah, I think with Pochettino,
he's ready to go anywhere.
I think there's another element. I don't think you're sold on Pochettino.
Yeah,
I think
maybe.
Also, remember when Spurs threw away the league title and there was the battle at Stamford Bridge?
Of course.
I still think there's some level of bad blood. I think they're aware of, we don't want to bring somebody in who the fans are not going to like or harbor old grudges. I remember years ago when Chelsea were linked with George Graham and, you know, the whole stadium started singing, "You can stick George Graham up your backside." To the match going contingent, there's still a big part of the match going contingent that's kind
of
old school.
I mean, these things matter. Yeah, with Benitez as well.
And Rafa Benitez as well. I mean, I don't think Poch was ever as acrimonious.
Yeah.
But they really don't like Spurs.
Yeah.
I think that's very obvious, right? So that leaves Luis Enrique. Now, there's reports, several people have come out and said that, you know, some are even saying he's in London now to talk to them. He said he wasn't going to take a job before the summer, right?
Yeah.
I think if I'm Luis Enrique, I could see the appeal and he likes the Premier League. You go, even then, it's the kind of thing where you ask him, "Hey, Luis Enrique, do you like the Premier League?" What's he going to say? "No, I don't like the," you know, I mean, nobody's going to say that, right?
Yeah.
What's curious to me, if you go with somebody like Lucho, you got to take the whole thing. You got to take the whole package. And the Lucho package comes with so many quirks and foibles and things that don't fit English football. Now, I can say Pep Guardiola didn't fit English football. Jurgen Klopp didn't. And then they came in and then they changed it. Arsene Wenger didn't fit English football. That's fine. But that was a long-term project. Those were long-term, well-funded projects. Took a while to get going.
Yeah.
Do Bowley and Igbali right now, when you've spent all this money, when you've got a clear vision of the direction of travel that you're going in, or that you're say you're going in with all the young players you bought and whatever, is this really what you want? Luis Enrique, who maybe says like, "Oh, you know, I want Eric Garcia," or whatever.
I see what you mean. Yeah.
Because he is not somebody who is flexible.
Yeah, that's
he's
true.
He's not somebody, he's somebody who will speak his mind.
Yeah.
I told you, my old buddy Franco Baldini, when they were at Roma, you know, he said, "Luis Enrique is the man secretly we all want to be, but just don't have the guts to be.
Yeah.
Because it comes with a price that you pay.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And
I mean, my thing is, if they thought it was hard to work with Thomas Tuchel, and that's why they sacked him eventually. I mean, Luis Enrique is not easy to work with either, in terms of stubbornness and personality, as you said. And
not stubborn in a bad way. Stubborn just because
just listen, with his own idea and philosophy.
He says, "I don't force you to agree with me, but I'm going to do my own thing because I believe it's right."
Exactly. But again, so you go from Tuchel to Potter, who's completely different, who is far more
accommodating.
Yeah, and even that is not working for you. To go back to someone who's far closer to Tuchel than he is to
you've made a commitment.
But Nagelsmann is quite similar too, to be fair.
To some degree, but I think there's a fundamental difference here. You, at some point, a club has to have an identity, right? It has to have a certain direction of travel that you bear. You have decided to buy into, we can call it the Red Bull model, if you want, in terms of the types of players you want, in terms of the type of football you play, and so on, right? Mm. And you've brought in Christopher Vivell to be your technical director and Lauren Stewart to be your co-sporting director.
Yeah.
Wayne Stanley, while he's not a former Red Bull guy and was at Brighton, in some ways, similar model, similar background. You know, there's an overlap with what Brighton were doing, right? They should decide the next manager. They should decide the next manager on the basis that it be somebody who's compatible with what they want to do. Now, I'm sure Frank Lampard can learn, because he's a very intelligent guy, in the interim basis. And this is why in his head he thinks longer term, who knows. I can't see Luis Enrique ever saying, oh, let's do things the Red Bull way. Ever. Right? It's just a different approach. And, you know, same thing goes for Poch as well, because we've seen this before. You know, Poch, as great as he is when he was at Spurs, he has this team of loyalists. I remember there's an agent I know who talked about going to see Pochettino, and he's lovely and whatever. But he has his assistants there, and every time he crack a joke, all the assistants all laugh along. Yes, boss. You know, behind closed doors it's different, but it is a very top-down type of management, and that's not the Red Bull way. Now, Nagelsmann comes with other baggage, but he is familiar with that system. He's familiar with that dynamic, right?
Yeah.
And maybe that's part of the reason it didn't work at Bayern.
Yeah, exactly.
So, for me, logically, that would be the way to go. But who knows? It's you said the greatest thing about Lampard is you're going to get your popcorn. Luis Enrique, sorry. You get the popcorn out, it's going to be entertaining.
Yeah. There's going to be drama for sure.
There'll be drama, but you know what? At some point, they're going to have to square the books here, and they're going to have to go and answer questions to their investors, because I've said this a million times, people act as if it's not the case, but Boli and Bedali Bali are very wealthy men, but they do not own Chelsea outright on their own. It's not their plaything. They have people they need to answer to as well.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
All right, enough Chelsea. How about some quick hits instead?
Let's go, guys.
Marcus Rashford scores the only goal, and David De Gea comes up big again.
Yeah.
Manchester United are back in the top four with a 1-0 win over Brentford. Jules, was this the reaction Erik ten Hag was looking for after that car crash at the weekend?
It was good. It was a good game, I thought, overall. I still think that Casemiro missing is huge, and you saw it again yesterday. I mean, Sabitzer is involved on the goal. But come on, him and McTominay is just not the same.
It's pretty grim when you go through one by one.
I know, exactly. And I think they just have to do without Casemiro and then hope for the best, because they can't just play as well without him than they do with him. But it's a big win. It's a very important win for the top four race, because that was getting, tight. But certainly after what we saw against Newcastle, and Brentford are good. It was certainly the result that Ten Hag would have wanted, maybe more than the performance anyway. Juventus and Inter draw 1-1 in the first leg of the Coppa Italia semi-final, but Gab, this game was overshadowed by Romelu Lukaku's sending off after being racially abused.
It was, as for the game, it was touchy. There was a fight at the end, sending off. It was really weird. It was Cuadrado and Andanovic looked like they were speaking very calmly, and then all of a sudden they're just wailing on each other. So what happened with Lukaku? I have a column coming out on this, but the bottom line is sometimes more than one thing can be true. There's a part of the story which is very simple and easy to understand, and there's a part of the story that's actually complex and nuanced. I'm going to start with the easy part. And the easy part is that Romelu Lukaku goes up to take a penalty, and there are people in the crowd who racially abuse him.
Yeah.
The encouraging part in all this, if there is something encouraging, Juventus immediately coming out and saying, not, oh, well, we're sorry if this happened, we'll collaborate to establish the facts, blah, 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 or whatever. No, they came out and they said, we're going to find these people. We have this state-of-the-art security system in the stadium.
Modern stadium in Italy.
Yeah, well, it's not just that they say it's like some sort of security terrorist thing that they have, that they can identify everybody and, you know, count the number of hairs in your nostrils. And so they said, we're gonna find these people, and they're going to be banned from the stadium. And on top of that, if you want to also charge them criminally, that's fine. We're going to go ahead and do that. So that's good. That's encouraging from Juventus. That is the easy part, and we should focus on that. We should focus on the fact that hopefully these people will be punished and keep up the pressure to make sure they're not just banned by Juve, but also if there's legal ways that they can be punished as well. All the other stuff is interesting and nuanced. It has to do with Lukaku's goal celebration, which some people say was a provocation, and that is why he was booked and he was sent off, because you're not allowed to interact, the directives in Serie A.
I mean, he did that, which a lot of players do without getting a yellow card, and then he told them to basically...
Right. So what you're doing when, and for those listening on the podcast, you just brought your fingers, your lips, and shirts now. He did that also a few games ago when he scored against Sweden for Belgium, right? He goes and he does a military salute and he puts a thing. He wasn't being racially abused then, so was it just his normal goal celebration? And then should the people in the stands not be getting wound up by it? Should the referee know that this is your normal goal celebration? It's got nothing to do with winding up the fans, right? There's all layers to this. Danilo, who,
that's the most disappointing, I think.
Well, it's weird because Danilo, the Juve player, he comes out afterwards and basically says, well, he wound up our fans. And by the way, when I say fans, these aren't Juve ultras. No. Juve ultras are in a dispute with the club. These are randos in the stand, right? These are random Juve fans who are there. He came out and he said, well, he provoked our fans.
Yeah, he was deserved.
The referee had no choice but to send him off. Danilo is a guy who, ironically, less than 2 weeks ago, it's on YouTube, you should see, it's one of the good things that Juve do, is Juve have this podcast on race and racism where they actually go into in-depth conversation with people of color, like Danilo, by the way, who talk about these issues. So I was shocked to hear it. He walked it back a little bit.
Mm.
There's got to be an attitude change, too. You don't have to go and defend the people in the stands automatically every single time before you even establish the facts of what happened. Other thing, guys... You guys are professionals. You know, I love the intensity, the rivalry getting wound up. But the melee that was created after he scored the penalty and stuff with the fans pushing, with the players pushing and shoving, and then again at the final whistle. Guys, you are setting this tone when you go and you shove each other and you shout at each other and you hit each other the way Handanovic and Cuadrado did. You know, you guys are pros. Act like pros.
Yeah.
Simple as. Newcastle stay third with a resounding 5-1 win away to West Ham.
Yeah.
Jules, they're not going away, are they?
No, they're not. And they're actually playing better and better. We saw them very convincingly beating Manchester United. Then they go away to West Ham, who are good and, you know, have a manager that should not be there anymore. But still, to go and play the way they did, score 5 goals, East side Callum Wilson, you know, everybody... tuning in, it was great to see, and they are very much in command, I think, for that top four finish.
Momentum.
Yeah, I'm reliably informed Bayern will not win the treble this year. They have the German Cup after losing at home to Freiburg 2-1. Gab, was Thomas Tuchel just unlucky with the penalty in that crazy long run strike?
Yeah, so Freiburg got their goal. One of them was this guy Hofler or whatever shooting from like a million yards out, and then the penalty, Jamal Musiala coming on. Jamal Musiala, not fully fit Jamal Musiala, apparently, comes on and, you know, lifts his hand to protect himself. There's no choice but to give a penalty. You know, he hasn't been trained in the put your arms behind your back school of defending. I don't think they were just unlucky. I think they were unlucky with the two incidents, but we saw that if Freiburg sit and defend, you need to break them down.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm sorry, if you don't have, you only have so many creative passers in the team. If the other team sits, it's difficult. It's difficult to break through. Some of his substitutions also didn't quite work out. You know, they could have won. Normal circumstances, they win this game. But I think the jury's still out. And I think you just have to accept it's going to take
losing
time.
Losing your second game in charge is not at home as well. It's not good.
Not a good sign. This was back on Monday, but Tottenham Hotspur drew 1-1 away to Everton with new interim boss Christian Stellini. Jules, do the players look any less selfish?
I don't know if they look less selfish, but I didn't see any difference really, Gab, between what we saw before Conte was sacked and what we saw against Everton, which was not a good performance from Spurs. They almost got a win, and I think it would have been a lucky win, to be fair, especially after the red card from Doucouré. And you can agree or not with Harry Kane rolling over on the floor and what Doucouré did, etc., etc. But in the end, they didn't play well, and they don't deserve to win that game, full stop. It's as simple as that.
Not much change. You'd almost think that Cellini had been the first team coach all along.
Exactly. Gab, you're just back from the UEFA Congress in Lisbon. Nobody is surprised Alexander Seferin was re-elected. He was the only candidate anyway. But did he have anything interesting to say?
I thought one interesting thing he put forward was, remember, like a month ago, all these people started saying, well, the Premier League is the Super League, blah, blah, blah. How do we counter that? I thought he was very pro-Premier League. He said, look, the reason the Premier League has so much money is because they have an egalitarian setup, or more egalitarian setup than most leagues do in terms of how they give out the money.
Yeah.
They're well-run. They have a product that people want to watch. And they generally work together and cooperate within each other. Now, obviously, we know that six Premier League teams also signed up for the Super League. And in other words, were less cooperative. But they've actually made active pledges not to do that again. The government passed legislation. There's no appetite for him. In some ways, while he's often clashed with Premier League teams, he needs the Premier League, and he needs their support and the support of those clubs.
Definitely.
Borussia Dortmund are also out of the German Cup. Jules, falling 2-0 to Leipzig. Marco Rose would have enjoyed that.
Yes, and he did. And to be fair, it was a very good performance from Leipzig from start to finish. Dortmund.
Second goal a bit, like, obviously at the end. In the hockey when you pull the goalkeeper. But
True. And to be fair, they could have, late in the game, Dortmund leveled the score. Didn't take the couple of kind of half chances that they had. But they were beaten by a better side, and Leipzig were really good. Timo Werner scoring the first goal. Bellingham was only on the bench. There was no Schlotterbeck, no Haller. I think it was a bit... it was not a B team from Dortmund because it was still a competitive team, but Leipzig were very good from the start.
Not a priority.
Yeah. Alexander Mitrovic has been given an 8-game ban for pushing referee Chris Kavanagh when Fulham played Manchester United in the FA Cup. So, does that sound right?
Well, Jules, I'd like to consider myself an expert on this, given that I wrote... I'm Paolo Di Canio's biographer.
Of course.
I did his autobiography when he famously pushed referee Paul Alcock a bazillion years ago. And I feel like that was kind of like the benchmark.
Yeah. You got 11 games now or something?
Know this. I think he did get 11 games. Yeah. And I think three were for the automatic red card and whatever. Now, I'm going to reveal all my biases here. I know it was a different time, but if you're going to use that as a benchmark, what's the same and what's different? Paolo Di Canio's push was not a violent push in any way, shape, or form. It looked worse because the guy took 17 steps backward and fell over. And by the way, it's on YouTube. It's still a freaking comedy moment, right?
Yeah.
And then he complained that he had pins and needles in his arms. And I was kind of surprised he didn't show up with one of those stupid neck braces that people do. Whatever. That's done. This was violent. And stupid. Not violent in the sense that you're going to hurt Chris Kavanagh.
No,
although
he was right in his face. Wasn't
he? Right in his face.
Angry.
There was a level of aggression.
Yeah.
It's not like, you know, Di Canio was turning away from him. I don't know. Look, the problem with establishing a ban, I think, is we know when it's too little. So if it's just been a couple games, you know it was too little. But whether you get 8 games or 12 games, you're going to have people who are going to come out and say, oh, you should get a 6-month ban, blah, blah, blah. What about the grassroots referees, examples for young players and whatever, right? So you're never going to – I think it's just so difficult to decide what is appropriate.
Yeah, no, for sure.
In the end, 8 games is probably fair. You know, it impacts Fulham in a big, big way because they won't have him for the run-in, which means that, you know, it's really going to impact the rush for Europa League place. And he'll have time to reflect on that.
Yeah.
And I think this is what you want. You want to, and so it's a serious disincentive. I think that's what punishment should be about at this stage. I mean, he knows he was wrong.
Yeah.
He's not even walks around justifying himself. Switzerland will host the 2025 Women's Euros.
Yeah.
This is interesting. I was actually there to witness the vote.
Yeah.
So the other bidders were France, who only got one vote.
That's so bad.
Yeah, I guess they figured, hey, you just had a World Cup 6 years ago.
And the Champions League final, I think.
Yeah,
in Paris,
enough.
You didn't help either.
Yeah. The other bidders, and it was split, it went down to the wire, were Poland, who I didn't realize had a big tradition of women's football, but, you know, that's coming along, I guess. The Nordic bid, which is our favorite Scandinavian countries.
Yeah.
And Switzerland. And Switzerland ended up winning this.
Yes, just about, as you said.
Is it a good choice?
Yeah. I mean, I would have liked the Nordic bid, I think.
Why do people like the Nordic bid?
Because they've been pioneering as well in women's football, you know, and they were not the first countries, but they were very, very big and encouraging on women's football, developing it. They were very good at it as well.
I think it's fair to say it's probably the most egalitarian, you know, in terms of the setup, in terms of the interest, in terms of the difference in interest between the local men's league and the local women's league. It's probably the closest margin.
Yeah, exactly. And I think it would have been nice for them to continue that development. And, you know, they're not as good as they used to be, clubs from Scandinavia, for example. But yeah, I liked it. I've got no issues with Switzerland either. You know, it would be not as far to go. For us to cover the Euros compared to Australia, where we're going to go in the summer, for example, and all of that. So, yeah, I'm happy for Switzerland as well. Real Madrid will play Osasuna in the Copa del Rey final after they snatch a 1-1 second leg draw against Athletic Club de Bilbao thanks to an extra time goal from Pablo Ibanez. Fair result, Gab?
Yeah, look, you view this as a fair result if you're the kind of person who, you know, is a bit romantic and you don't like defensive teams and teams that grounded out. Athletic Bilbao had a ton of shots.
Yeah.
They went for it. They had to because they were a goal down from the first leg. They took the league. It went to extra time, and then up pops Pablo and gets it done. And, you know, that's football too. There's more than one way to go and play football. Well done, Osasuna. A ridiculous goal from Ludovic Blas sends Nantes through to the Coupe de France final as they upset Laurent Blanc and Lyon 1-0. Joseph, it was quite the celebration at the end. I need to ask you two things. One about Comboiré, who, you know, and this was a battle of former Paris Saint-Germain coaches.
Of course.
Comboiré will forever be seen as the guy who got a raw deal, right?
Yeah.
I want to ask you about the Ludovic Blas goal, though, because
amazing.
You're the techers guy. How does
he do that? If you haven't seen it, he receives the ball in the box with his back to goal and he chests it, and then there's a second little touch and then he volleys it. There's
the second touch looks like it's off the top of his shoulder to control.
Just,
who controls the? Who teaches you to control a ball after?
It's crazy. And after the game, Moussa Sissoko was interviewed on French television and he said, and Blas was next to him and he said, listen, this is a genius goal scored by a genius player, which I think Blas is, not at the level of maybe other geniuses that you can have in mind.
But like Savigny.
Yeah, but he's such an amazing player, really, that he will go to a bigger club in the summer. And before that, he wants to win a second Coupe de France in a row for Nantes, because obviously they won it last year. And the celebration, there was a pitch invasion that was planned almost by the club, like it was last year when they also won the semi-final before going to the Stade de France. And it was just amazing. And there's such a big club in France, such historical club, that it's good to see them again on a great cup run.
I have something to say about this, about the pitch invasion, because, look, I am not endorsing pitch invasion. So let me make this very, very clear.
Yeah.
Sometimes bad things happen. We've seen them, and player safety is important, right? But I was struck by this because I watched the highlights of this game on the Nantes website. So obviously they decide to put what they want to put, right?
Yeah.
And they put the pitch invasion at the end.
Yeah.
I mean, literally, you see like a wall of people on the bench cheering and stuff. And so clearly they knew it was going to happen. It didn't bother them. It was joyous. It was happy. I wonder how in the Premier League, whenever there is a pitch invasion, right, even if it's a happy pitch invasion, somebody's staying up, there's always people who, you know, clubs often flip out, right? Yeah, because, health and safety, they're going to damage the pitch. What bugs me is ex-pros come out and say, oh, whoa, those people coming on the pitch, they have no business being there. What if somebody has a knife or a gun? And I'm like, first of all, it's so stupid because what does it mean? You never leave your house if you're a professional football player? No, like, guys, seriously, you go to the pub, you go to the corner shop. There could be somebody with a knife and a gun walking down the street. Like, it's a difficult needle to thread, I think, for a club, right? Because those are fantastic memories. It gives you a fantastic sense of community. But equally, when you have a crowd spilling onto the pitch.
You have to be careful. But the stewards were ready. They had everything to make the space for the
cordon, like for the players.
And the players came back out after to celebrate with their fans. They were really amazing. And they have amazing fans at the La Beaujoire and in Nantes. So, well done to them. And now they will play either Annecy from the second division or Toulouse, and they play the other semi-final tonight on Thursday night. No fairy tale for Cremonese in the Coppa Italia. They lose at home to Fiorentina 2-0 in the first leg of their semi-final. Gab, your thoughts?
All right, look, they're last in Serie A. I think they
won just one game.
They're not good. They tend to play attacking football, and because they're not good, they tend to concede a lot. Fiorentina are absolutely flying under Vincenzo Italiano. They're playing great football. Nico Gonzalez on form. Cabral is scoring. This is always going to be too steep a hill to climb for them. There is a second leg, but you lose at home. I think they're done. In the year of Gianluca Vialli's passing, it would have been a fantastic story. Equally, they can go and tell their grandkids that they knocked out
Napoli and Roma.
Napoli and Milan, the way, which is pretty darn special. Ajax went away to Feyenoord 2-1 and will face PSV Eindhoven, who beat something called Spakenborg. Sorry, I was not familiar with their work. They're going to play each other in the Dutch Cup final. But Jules, this game was overshadowed, I think, by Davy Klaassen being hit in the head by projectile thrown from the stands. And I wasn't quite clear to me what hit him, but whatever it was, it was hard and
it
was sharp.
Bleed, the back of his head was all full of blood.
He's obviously bald or shaven-headed, but like you can see the blood coming out.
He looks like a lighter. Yeah, he looks like it was a lighter or something. The crowd was very much up for it, of course. As always, at Feyenoord, no away fans, so it was just, not that it would have made a difference, but just to say that the rivalry and I think the animosity between the sets of fans, and same with PSV, in a season where Ajax have not done well, not as well as Feyenoord in the league either. So this was a huge game, and it's such a shame because it was a good game of football, and then it stopped, and then they came back to play out the last half hour, it was or something, from that semi-final. Klaassen restarted the game and then felt too dizzy and had to come off. So really, we should not be seen. And we say it every single time.
I don't want to pick on Feyenoord, but now obviously there's talk of them being banned from traveling to Rome in the Europa League. That comes from before. That comes from when they visited Rome in the past, I think 2016, 2017. And they seriously damaged a medieval fountain and stuff. You come with a reputation, certain clubs, and when you live up to that reputation,
that's not
it's problematic.
Leicester City lose at home to Aston Villa on Tuesday night, but there's a new manager on his way with Graham Potter not available. The leading candidates for now are Rafa Benitez and Adi Hütter. Who do you like best? I think I know.
Who do I like best in terms of being a fun night out? By the way, you know what Adi's real name is? It is what you think it is.
Yes.
And that's why he goes by
Adi.
We keep
it to Adi. It's much better. Yeah.
I do wonder when your name is, when your last name is Hütter, sounds a lot like something else. I don't know. I don't know what his parents were thinking. Anyway, I use Rafa Benitez. It's Rafa Benitez because Adi Hütter is a very good coach, but you need preseason. Yeah. It's a different way of playing from the way Brendan Rodgers does. Rafa Benitez comes in, Mr. Fix-It, blah, blah, blah. I think he can be more of a short-term impact, and that's what they need right now because they're in the relegation zone. Two goals within a minute for your boy, Randall Colomuani, and Eintracht beat Union Berlin to advance to the German Cup semi-final. Bet you're happy for him.
Yeah, two goals in 2 minutes. Mario Götze creating those two goals as well very early on. The game was over after that. 19 goals, now in 34 games in all competitions for Colomuani. An amazing season with the World Cup in between, too. It's just, he's got, I really think that this the sky's the you know, there's no ceiling to him, to his talent.
Well, there's no ceiling. Come on now.
No, he's not going to become Messi or Mbappe, but I think he's got that.
Is he going to become Lewandowski?
And that room for improvement, that's the thing. He's 24. He's a late bloomer. I've told you the story many times. Right. And I think this is great. And that's only the beginning for him. That's what I meant.
More. Okay. He still hasn't cracked my top three of elite athletes named Randall.
Yeah,
fair enough. We'll give him time.
Yeah, okay. Norway's Liz Klaveness failed in her bid to get elected to the UEFA exec committee. Gab, was it such a big story? Why was it such a big story?
So the reason this is a big story and so many people paid attention to it, I mean, is obviously the fact, it's not so much the fact that she's a woman. I mean, Debbie Hewitt was from the, who's the chairperson or the chair, whatever they call it, of the English FA. She was elected to the FIFA Council as UEFA's representative. The first woman to win an election against a man. Is that these are UEFA executive committees. So in UEFA, you've got the UEFA president, and then you've got the general secretary, and then you have the executive committee, which is representatives from different member FAs and different areas of the game, and they kind of make the broad decisions by a vote and whatever else. And what tends to happen is when these people retire, they kind of get together and they say, well, like, I think they had seven places to fill. So some spots, I should stress, are reserved for women.
Yeah.
And they said, look, you know, it's kind of not prearranged, but they kind of say, well, I don't really want to run if I'm not going to win, how much other support do I have?
Yeah, so
essentially, they had nine people running for seven slots. And she said, well, I'm going to run. And I'll see. People can vote for me if they want to. And because she's very outspoken, she took, you remember her at the World Cup draw?
Yeah.
You know, taking the floor and criticizing FIFA over the migrants. And people said, oh, she's going to come in, and if she gets on the executive committee, she can shake things up. I think people didn't vote for her because she's been in her job since March 2022, and there's a certain level of seniority that's seen.
Yeah.
I don't think it's a bad thing that she didn't get elected from her perspective, because I think she can be more effective as a voice outside. Once you're inside, you know, it's almost like, okay, Elise, come on board.
Yeah, you're in the family now.
And then you're in the family, and then it becomes harder because you can get isolated. Outside, she can say whatever she wants. I think she's a future in leadership, and I think they need other voices, different voices, and good for her. But it's not some sort of tragedy that she didn't get elected. Daniel Podence has been charged by the FA for spitting at Brennan Johnson during the Wolves Forest game. Jules, I can't conceive of why you would spit at somebody when there are cameras around. I'm not one of those people who says, like, oh, this is the most disgusting thing you can ever do. No, I think the most disgusting thing you can do is intentionally hurting somebody and ending their career. So that's worse, right?
No, but
it's not great. But to do it in front of the cameras, that same night, a match of the day, like, they showed, they roll the videos, and it's like, oh, look, does he spit? Does he not spit? And, like,
it's obvious.
They're going to catch you.
It's so obvious. Yeah, they're going to catch you, of course. And
how stupid is this guy?
They've caught others before. So you should know. I mean, just to think in your head about spitting on someone is just, I think, crazy. It would never come up to my mind to spit on someone, you know, in a football match or anywhere, really. So for that, and to think that you're going to get away with it, it was bad.
I'm not as good as you are, so it would cross my mind and has crossed my mind in different scenarios, but not if I were a professional footballer with cameras trained all around.
Yeah.
And by the way, picking on Brennan Johnson, of all the Forest players you can spit at, Brennan Johnson, come on.
Sweet. Lazio, Roma and Salernitana are being investigated by the local prosecutor in Rome for inflating transfer swaps between 2017 and 2021. Lazio president Claudio Lotito, who we mentioned many times on the show, and current Roma owners Ryan and Dan Friedkin have been named in the investigation. Lotito own Lazio and Salernitana, by the way, at the same time. Gab, is this like the investigation that got Juve the 15 points deduction?
The accusations are pretty much the same, and we've explained why they do that for the magic of amortization. I'm not going to go into that because people are bored of this. I think this is significant because Juve felt targeted, and they said, well, why not everybody else? And there's a bunch of clubs, and some of the clubs that Juve dealt with, they could yet be charged, but here's something that's got nothing to do with Juve, although, well, some of the deals were with Juve, like the Spinazzola deal for Pellegrini when, you know, they were... This isn't Lorenzo Pellegrini. This is Luca Pellegrini. Not quite the same thing.
Not the same player.
So these things happened, and I think if you're going to be fair about it, you investigate stuff that looks suspicious, and that's what magistrates. This is a criminal investigation, may yet lead to a sporting investigation. You may yet face a criminal investigation. Well, they are being criminally investigated. They may yet lead to charges. Guys, there are rules. We need to have consistency, I think, above all.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah,
so exactly. I have no issue with this. I do think when they kind of go after the owners, you wonder how involved they actually are,
how much they know.
As opposed to, although in Lotito's case, the guy prides himself on knowing everything everywhere about everybody. So, Jules, let's celebrate Cristiano. We've got the whole show. We haven't had our Cristiano moment. We haven't even mentioned Cristiano yet. Al Nassr beat Al Adala 5-0. I can't tell you if that's a fair result or not because I'm for the highlights and I know nothing about Al Adala, but I know you can tell me about that second goal that turned back the clock.
Of course. I mean, the first one is a pen. Good. He scores pens. That's what he does. The second one on the edge of the box from the left-hand side, one-on-one with the player, and he actually runs past.
Accelerates.
Yeah, accelerates. And
turns on the afterburners.
Exactly. And then great finish with his left foot. So like an old-school Cristiano goal, if you want, from years ago. He still has it, certainly against Al Adala. So.
Okay, can I also make a point about that? Like, obviously, you lose agility and physique, even when you train as much as Cristiano does. But I also thought about it. We've seen, like, for example, Olympic sprinters, who are still ridiculously fast at winning gold medals, well into the 30s, right?
Yeah.
So that side of Cristiano's game, there's no reason that that should necessarily...
I mean, still, at that age, he's still...
But when you lead the monk life...
I know, which is true.
I mean, Usain Bolt, well into his mid-30s, was running sub-10 seconds, right?
Yeah, Linford Christie as well was still very good, late 30s. But, I still think that he's not a sprinter, though. And I think he has lost a bit of pace. But certainly on that goal, he found it again. So well done to him. Milan president Paolo Scaroni called San Siro old and obsolete. That's not very nice, Gab, is it? We love that ground.
No, it's upsetting to me, too, because, of course, I was literally born across the street from the San Siro.
Exactly.
On the other hand, he didn't need to be so mean about it.
But he's right, too.
Well, he gave a very cogent explanation of why you can't simply go and renovate San Siro, which is you've got two football clubs in Milan, and one of them plays at San Siro effectively every 4 days during the season, right? Because they're in the Champions League, the Coppa Italia, and so on. And it's not just these are just two clubs. These are two clubs that will bring 60,000 to 70,000 people at every home game. So there's no way you can renovate it without shutting everything down.
Yeah.
If they shut down, they have to go somewhere else to play. And who else can accommodate 60,000 people? You can't send them to the Olympic Stadium in Rome, which is 4.5 hours away, by the way, because there's two teams there.
Already?
Are you going to send them to Naples? Are you going to send them to Turin?
Yeah.
They don't want to go to Turin, and you probably don't want them. Where are they going to go? Should they go play in Munich? No, but I mean,
it's fair.
Like,
just practically.
Much as it hurts me that they're going to do this, shutting down, you know, and also the way the San Siro's built, it's not like, you know, some English stadiums, not the newer ones, but some of the older ones. For example, at Chelsea, they redid the whole stadium years ago.
Yeah.
But those are four different stands, so you just shut one stand, everybody goes
exactly
into the other one, you shut another stand, you know, you rotate through them. Fine. But what are they supposed to do? Go and play? They could play in Monza at the Brianteo, which I think holds 22,000. Is that fair to anybody?
No,
is that fair to their fans and the season ticket holders? So that's why their whole plan, look, we can stay in the area. We'll build a stadium next door to the San Siro, but everybody's getting in the way. At some point, you can say, oh, they're being greedy. They're doing this to maximize profits. No, they're doing it to maximize sustainability as well, to be able to monetize the stadium so that the club can stay alive and the club can stay competitive. That is the argument.
Yeah,
and it really bugs me when people say, it's all about greed. Come up with a different solution.
Yeah.
You know. Lawyers for Liverpool fans have lodged some 900 claims, I think 877, something like that, against UEFA following the chaos of the Champions League final in Paris. Jules, what happens next?
I'm not too sure, Gab. I mean, we've said before, UEFA have said that they would reimburse the match tickets. And we've also said that...
And they've apologized.
They've apologized. That's the least they can do. But that the trauma from those fans who were stuck outside behind the gates at the Stade de France that we all saw, it's not giving them back the 60 quid or 70, 80, whatever they paid for the ticket is going to make things good. So I don't really know what more UEFA can do, to be fair to them.
Can they take action against the city and the, or the law enforcement?
Yeah, the Paris, the law enforcement, the police in Paris, the French Federation maybe as well, who got away with it. We've said that before too. I don't know, but you can understand why those Liverpool fans are not letting go. And they're right, because that was a traumatizing experience for them that should never have happened and should never happen again.
You're blaming the French Federation. Can we add this to the long list of complaints against Noël Legrand?
Yeah, Noël, of course, you know. The FA deleted a tweet, that's the English FA, deleted a tweet that compared some of his biggest stars like Bernie Shaw and Sam Kerr to Barbie dolls. Apparently, it's a reference to the Barbie selfie generator, and that's part of a promotion for the new Barbie movie that's coming out soon in the cinema. Gab, does that make sense to you? It's a weird one, this one.
Okay, so I was totally unaware that, because it's really not my taste in film and it's not my demographic. I'm not the target audience for the Barbie movie. I don't know what a Barbie selfie generator is. I did see this tweet, and basically it turns them into Barbie dolls. This is, look, I get what they're trying to do, appealing to kids and so on.
Yeah.
But I don't want to go old school, but I'm assuming you didn't play with Barbie dolls, but no. You have a sister. They were around, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Barbie is not a woman. It's not what women look like. It's not what athletes look like. It's not even what your fantasy porn star looks like, because human beings don't look like that. And there's a whole bunch of people who've talked about issues of self-esteem with girls and so on, and part of the reason we encourage them to play sports is so that they can build that up, so that we can't just based on some sort of idealized version and so on. You know, it's funny. You look at Ken dolls. It's not like Ken's all muscular and has a six-pack. Like also, I guess Ken dolls are for girls, right? Boys would play with other, but whatever. But it's stupid.
Yeah,
it's stupid.
Yeah.
It sends the wrong message, especially also because. So it's a credit to the FA. They put it out there. They said, let's do this commercial deal or whatever. Let's piggyback with this. And they say, hey, Mattel, maybe we don't really want to be associated with this. It's fine in its own context. So well done for them for backtracking, especially because what they're trying to do now, for a while, the marketing strategy in terms of growing the women's game from the FA was, let's appeal to young girls and families and stuff like that. Now it's, let's apply to football fans who like watching adult women play football, right? So it's just a different...
Yeah, it is.
It's a different thing, right? I mean, Paris Saint-Germain don't... They don't have a Kylian Mbappe action figure. No, or they don't turn him into an event.
Oh, not yet. So no.
The only superhero in football is who?
Hans van Eyken? Oh, no, that's your Mr. Champions League.
It's Victor Osimhen.
Of course, yeah.
Obviously, we're going to talk about it in a minute. The Lionel Messi sweepstakes have begun, or are continuing, I should say. Jules, his dad was in Saudi Arabia, and our colleagues in Spain are reporting it's 50-50 that he might go there. Others insist, and I think we've maybe speaking to the same people, he's 100% going to Inter Miami, and they're ready to give him equity in the club. Now, just while I was in Lisbon, I spoke to somebody who's very close to Nasser Al-Khelaifi, and he assures me that it's very likely he's going to stay in Paris for another season.
Yeah.
Because everything's fine at PSG. Nothing to see
of
here.
Course.
And, of course, Laporta says the door is always open for him to return to Barcelona. I see no reason why this shouldn't continue.
Of course. Leave every door open.
For months and months. There's no reason if you're Messi, you're going to come in now, right?
Yeah, and right now, those four clubs have 25% chances of having him next season. I think with PSG, it's less likely because, one, they want him to take a pay cut. So he will earn more money in two of the other
three. Alex, don't depress me and tell me that Messi's motivated by money at this stage of his career. Seriously.
Nobody likes to take a pay cut. Messi and anybody else. Nobody likes it.
You know what? If you were to give me my favorite job in the world, I would tell an announcer right now to my bosses, I would take a 50% pay cut from what I'm on now.
Yeah.
If I could have my ideal job in the world.
True. But for Messi right now, I think he would be happy to go back to Barcelona. I think he would be happy to go to Inter Miami. I think the Saudis, he might take that offer and take
the money. They seem very certain.
Yeah. Okay. And for PSG, this is just the way it is. But right now, you're right. Keep every door open. Keep talking to people. And then when you want, you make your final decision. And then we see what you decide. Victor Osimhen lost his mask while away on international duty last month. And I'm sure it's not a coincidence, but since then, he got injured and missed Napoli's home game with Milan and that defeat. Gab, there's a solution, though.
It's interesting because first of all, this definitively proves that it's not Osimhen as good. It's the mask, right? It's a little bit like Iron Man and Tony Stark, right?
Exactly.
Without the suit, Tony Stark is nothing. He's a weakling, right?
Yeah.
Put it on and he's pretty badass, right? So I think it's the same with Osimhen's mask, and that's why, and he realizes because he's a humble man. And this is why he had another mask made. This one actually, I think, has his like name and number on it. It's not some generic off-the-shelf mask.
Yeah.
So Napoli's a very superstitious city. And we'll see if the new mask works.
How do you lose your mask, though?
I think he lost it while in international duty with Nigeria.
Oh, man.
I don't know. It can happen, man. It can happen. All right, Jules, this brings us to an end. But I'm going to be back on Monday. You're on holiday.
Yeah.
I'll be going to Don Hutchinson, but a very, very credible stand-in. Until then, love the game, love your neighbor, love yourself.